You're listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 3. The unofficial fifth line of the Leafs.
This is a lot of play for a guy who is capable of a lot more. A lot of drive-bys.
It's like a lot of cool stick handling on the perimeter and blah, blah, blah. And then all of a sudden it doesn't go in. And he'll just like stick check and then lull back. And it's he's not there. Right. Not even close, actually.
This is Overdrive with Hayes, Noodles, and the O-Dog on TSN 1050.
All right, we're waiting on the Cooperstown announcement. We believe Roy Halladay will be granted an invitation at some point in the next 20 minutes, but when the news breaks officially, we will get it to you. This is Hour 3 of Overdrive, TSN 1050 on the TSN app, now up on TSN 2. Brian Hayes, the O-Dog, Jeff O'Neill, Jamie Noodles McLennan, buddy Gord Ash will be in studio later in the hour to talk about Roy Halladay, and Mariano Rivera's getting in. There's a couple of other guys that appear to be in. Bonds and Clemens are not getting in this year. Doesn't sound like it, but trending towards maybe next year or the year after that, one of them, if not both.
What a story, though. What an emotional time for the family, because you know Roy Halladay, his respect for the game and how much he would have loved this honor, and it just, it's what an emotional time for the family.
Yeah, it's sad. It really is sad.
It's sad.
And I believe he's going to be wearing a Blue Jays cap. I believe he said that.
Yeah.
He pulled off one of the old one-day retirement signings to retire officially as a Blue Jay. You know how I generally feel about that, but
he'll let it slide this time.
I'll let it slide for Roy. So we'll see what happens in the next 20 minutes, and we'll get that news to you. Bob McKenzie, your Hockey Insider, coming up here in a moment. I feel like what kind of percentage would you place, or should we place, on the other Canadian teams and how much we talk about them? Putting the Leafs aside, we talk about the Leafs a ton, clearly. Well, but does Edmonton take up 80%?
It's taken a lot of our oxygen lately. But that's lately. Like, McDavid moves the needle regardless. But should we, I mean, Winnipeg just, I still maintain Winnipeg's the best team on paper in Canada.
Yep. I think maybe in the league. I think they might be the most balanced team. As good as Tampa is, I love how balanced Winnipeg
is. So then, but Vancouver's had a real nice season, and Pettersson is a superstar already.
Do you guys not think that Pettersson, if Vancouver gets in, he not only should be up for the Rookie of the Year, he's going to win the Rookie of the Year, but he might get some heart sniffs.
He should get some votes.
Because every time he's in the lineup, he's like the main reason they win a game.
Mm-hmm. Well, he just came back. Look what he did. He scored 10 minutes into the game.
Goal and an assist.
When I watch Vancouver, I think Pettersson's a superstar in that, but I think one of their biggest turnarounds has been a net. Like, going into the season, when you looked at that tandem of Anders Nielsen and Jacob Markstrom, like, nothing screamed like that was going to get you to the next level. Markstrom's played so well that they moved Nielsen out and called up the kid Demko. But that Markstrom he seems to be quite a legit goaltender. And that's, for me, when I looked at him, coming out of Florida, he had nothing but skill, but he couldn't put it together. And now he's got it together. The goalie coach out there, they're giving a ton of love to. His name's Ian Clark. But,
well, he was in the Luongo trade, wasn't he?
Yes.
Like, they've been waiting for him for years.
That's what I'm saying. Could you imagine a market like Vancouver, which is very fickle and very hard on goaltenders? You had Luongo and Schneider on your roster at one point, and this is when Schneider was really good and really elite. He's obviously hit the ditch. And then you went, and Markstrom hasn't put it together for years. All of a sudden, he looks...
He's been good.
He's really...
Yeah.
So
Vancouver's taking some love.
But Ottawa doesn't get... Montreal,
we don't talk about them a lot. They deserve more.
But it's Edmonton because it's...
It's a soap opera.
It's a soap opera.
And it's McDavid.
It's the accident on the side of the road that you're driving by, and you're like, we got to talk about that. We got to watch that. We got to see what's going on. But everything else, like Winnipeg, just go about their business. Yeah. Like Patrick Laine, like Austin Matthews is in a funk scoring. Patrick Laine as well. He's got 25 goals, I believe. But he had
18 in 1 month.
I know.
He had 18.
But here's a guy, but that team just continues to kind of roll along. And I don't think enough.
That's a weird season. 18 in a month?
Yeah.
You look at the rest of it, it is ugly.
It's not good.
Like, Patrick Laine is not having a very solid platform year. For a guy who's an RFA, and we all were handing out $10 million a year, $11 million a year, and he still might get that. You know, his talent is still there. I think that's... Right. We all get caught in the bubble. We're all guilty of it. We forget. He hasn't
forgotten how to play. We've been talking about like all the guys that are coming up, and sometimes when he disappears like that, you don't even mention his name. You're like, Kachuk, Aho, Braden Point, where Line A should be the first guy you mention.
We had 45 goals, 44 last year, 44. Yeah. Now, he's on pace.
Because of the month.
Right, but that's the thing. Like, when you look at it, like, Austin Matthews still may end up with, you know, 38 or 40.
He's on pace for a prorated monster season over 82. Because even in the slump, he's still got points.
Right.
You know, he's got one goal in 13 games. I think he has, I think Matthews might have 12 assists.
Right.
Like, he's almost got a point a game, even though he's slumping based on the
goal
way
scoring.
We see him.
Right.
Goal scoring, the overall impact he's having on the game. And that, I think, applies to Line A. Line is going to get his.
Yeah.
But I expected him to be a more matured player by year three in terms of overall game. And it's not there based on what I've seen.
And the team is like, Scheifele's a superstar. Like, Wheeler's having another great year. Like,
he's not relied upon the same way that Matthews is here.
They push him around the lineup a little bit. Kind of, you know, Matthews is front and center. That's what it is. So, yeah, a lot of the oxygen outside of the Leafs really has gone to Edmonton. And then it's been a blurb here about Ottawa, a blurb about Montreal, and you know, Winnipeg, Vancouver, Calgary is second in the league. Do we even talk the Flames ever?
Not a lot, man.
In the National Hockey
League. Yes, I understand that. And you talk about goaltending.
Yeah.
David Riddick, where did this guy come from? No one had ever heard of him before prior to the start of the season.
Free agent sign. I mean, last year a little bit, but he's
not like you. I'm not saying you, Noodles.
But
I'm saying the average grinder on the Parkway right now.
But I'm saying, like, I don't see him, and I still, as a clear-cut 60-game starter. Me personally, I just
who would you rather have, Riddick or Koskinen, for the next 3 years at 4.5?
I'm personally going with Koskinen. Big Save Dave.
Okay, yeah.
Really? From the structure, it's Koskinen, but I can't bet against Riddick what he's been
doing. He's on a heater right now.
Yeah, he's on a heater. He's been great.
Here's Bob McKenzie, our hockey insider. How you doing, Bob?
Excellent, boys. How you doing?
We're doing very well. We've been dissecting the comments of Kyle Dubas today.
I had a feeling you might be doing that.
Yes. I know it's unlike us to do that, but if he gave us an inch, we're going to take a mile, and we've been running a marathon on this all afternoon. but he said something about Dubas and the contract. I mean, healthy dialogue. What does Bob McKenzie read into that?
It's still dancing as opposed to getting down to the nitty-gritty, in my view. Healthy dialogue means that, you know, the Leafs are probably repeating over and over again how we're really going to need everybody to pitch in a little bit here and everybody take a little less than you possibly could get if we're going to keep the band together. I'd be really surprised if they've gotten down to the brass tacks of, like, trading numbers and structure, contract structures and all of that back and forth. But I would assume that that'll happen in relatively short order. The fact that Kyle Dubas and Judd Moldover had a meeting, I'm sure there'll be more. And as Kyle himself said, you know, the more information they have at the trade deadline, the better. So, you know, that sounded to me like a guy that, all things being equal, would like to try and get something done between now and the deadline, but it's also an artificial deadline, not for trades, but for getting players signed. You can still make trades and ballpark what you're going to end up having to pay Matthews and Marner and the whole gang and go that way if you need to, but it would be nice to know that you've got it all taken care of and it's done.
Well, I guess that begs the question, how much difference can the number be, the projected number be, on February 25th compared to July 1st? I mean, what could possibly change that would lead to millions of dollars coming off the table or going on the table?
Nothing, really. Because it's funny, because, you know, right now at this moment in time, is Austin Matthews playing like one of the best players in the National Hockey League? No, he's not.
No.
But it doesn't matter for the contract, because, you know, star players like Austin Matthews and others like him, their attitude going into negotiation is, well, you know what? The stock market goes up and down every day, but if you're a blue chip stock that is going to be really profitable for the next decade, then the cost is fixed, and we're not subjected to the vagaries of goal scoring slumps or other things like that, because the overall package is what it is, and you're going to have to pay for it. Now, the Leafs might say, well, you know what? I mean, if you're proving that you're mere mortal, then maybe the contract, I'm not saying you're going to get a mortal contract, but, you know, maybe it's not Connor McDavid's. And again, you go back to what the salary cap is, what the salary cap's going to be. You start getting into things like percentages of caps, and that's what a lot of agents use in this instance. Connor McDavid got the money that he got because Sidney Crosby and Jonathan Toews and Patrick Kane and Evgeny Malkin and a whole bunch of guys before him got the percentage of cap that they got. And that's how a lot of these deals get done. And if you do it on percentage of a cap, then it ends up that on an 8-year deal, Austin Matthews would get way north of what Connor McDavid made. We've had this conversation a lot before, and people are going to say, that's crazy, that's nuts. And yeah, maybe it is, but that's kind of the way people do business. Now, the Leafs don't want to do business that way, but maybe his agents do. So that's why when you talk conceptually, before you can get down and just start throwing numbers back and forth, you got to kind of explain to each other what each side's looking for in terms of the concepts.
Bobby, we were talking about Mitch Marner earlier in the show, like how he's committed to not negotiating. But we were saying if they came to him with a boatload of cash, does he still say, no thanks, I'll wait to the summer?
Oh, I think anybody, you never say never. But there's no question. I mean, Darren Ferris, Mitch Marner's agent, is taking this tack too, because he absolutely 100% wants to be second. He does not want to be first. So you could come to Mitch with a boatload of cash, but he's not going to take it until he knows what Matthews is making. We'll see where it goes from there. But it's going to be fascinating to figure out how to crack this nut, because I'm sure both guys are going to be looking for double digit numbers, everybody can do the math on how difficult that makes things for the Toronto Maple Leafs. When you've got Andreas Johnsson and Kasperi Kapanen, and you're not too far away from guys like Travis Dermott and others, so, and Jake Gardner potentially walking out the door and what have you. So, it's the nature of the beast in the game. It's not telling anybody anything, certainly not telling the Leafs anything they don't already know, and they'll just try and hammer away at this thing and see if they can move the peanut along.
With Bob McKenzie, your Hockey Insider, how does all of this movement talk apply to the front office in Edmonton and the reports by Ryan Rashog and others that maybe Peter Chiarelli could be on his last leg in Edmonton, which wouldn't surprise anybody? But
no.
Now we're talking ticket sales and apathy in the marketplace. I mean, is that kind of what has finally tipped the hand here or what?
Well, I think it's just the combination of all of the above. And, and the Oilers are still in a playoff race, but as I've said multiple times this week, it's kind of a low bar to be saying, wow, we're in a playoff race. Yeah, you are, but the overall prospects for the team don't look all that bright unless we're all misreading the situation horribly and getting Andre Sekera back at some point here, or, it's suddenly going to rejuvenate them. But, they got big holes up front. They don't have offensive depth. They don't have high-end guys on the blue line. And the question then becomes, well, how do you get them? And that, this path to the next level for the Oilers is a tricky one to navigate. And you've got Peter Chiarelli, who has been a very well-respected general manager of the National Hockey League, won a cup with the Bruins. A good man, good guy, and historically a good general manager. But as I said on a number of radio stations this week, if you just look at the list of transactions that Chiarelli's made with the Edmonton Oilers, the significant ones, it's like one after another where the Oilers are coming out on the wrong side of it. And so, if you're owner Daryl Cates and Bob Nicholson, you got to be pondering your options. And there's a natural break here for the All-Star weekend, so that fuels the speculation that if you did want to make a change, but you can't just make change for change's sake. You can't just say, well, you know what? We're eventually going to make a change no matter what, so we might as well do it now, because these things don't run themselves. And you got to have a plan B. And if the plan B is no better than plan A, even though plan A is not working at all right now, it's shame on an owner or an executive who would just, make an emotional decision and do something rash and not have all the ducks lined up in a row as to how you're going to handle it after that. And this is not an ideal time of the year to be, if you are contemplating making a change, it's not an ideal time to be, you know, getting people from other organizations. You start to really limit yourself because there's a whole bunch of organizations at this point of the year, right before the trade deadline, and if it's an assistant general manager on another team you're after, and you say, yeah, I was wondering, might we talk to the guy about leaving your team high and dry 4 weeks before the trade deadline, to say nothing of the draft and free agency this summer, and the teams are going to be like, are you kidding me? Buzz off. And so your potential pool of people who might do this job, if it's not Peter Chiarelli, becomes a lot smaller than it otherwise would. So does that change the way you approach it and say, yeah, you know what, we want to make a change, but maybe we'll just closely monitor the situation for the balance of the year and we'll see where we are at the end of the season. So I guess everything's, all options are on the table.
Well, it's always fun tracking the Oilers. It's always a soap opera here, Edmonton, Ottawa. I mean, there's only 7 Canadian teams, but man, do we supply a lot of material.
But the oxygen, we were saying before you came on, Bob, like it's outside of Toronto, 80% of our oxygen has been in Edmonton, and we haven't even barely talked Calgary, who's second in the league, and Vancouver's been a great story.
Well, yeah, we don't want to talk the good stories, only the bad ones.
I think Calgary's got to be proactive, though, at the deadline. Like, there's, you know, Toronto's got to continue to add to depth of a very good team. Yeah. So does Calgary. I mean, that's where, you know, we talk about Chiarelli making those moves. Like, do you get a sense that he may have fast-tracked a little bit of the deadline as far as, if you know, him grabbing some D and some other, obviously Bob Murray and Anaheim started to shuffle the deck. You know, Dallas made a minor trade. But, like, you know, it's is there a lot of chatter right now that you're picking up on?
Yeah, although there is, and that, but what I've pined to is we have had a flurry of smaller trades for the most part. But once you get into, once it goes to February, like after the All-Star weekend, a lot of times teams are like, yeah, you know what, let's just play this out for as long as we can and see what we can do. And that's not to say there won't be trades 3 or 4 weeks ahead of time, but as a rule, once we get into February, it's like, let's wait to the final week and then buckle up.
All right, Bob. We'll get you in here later in the week. Thank you.
Sounds great. Thanks.
Bob McKenzie, your Hockey Insider. I think that's official, isn't it? We're watching it here. Roy Halladay, he's in. So Halladay's in for 2019. First ballot, man. That's a big accomplishment.
Yeah.
Because the sanctimony of a lot of voters and unwritten rules. And, I mean, there's never been a unanimous player voted into the Hall of Fame. How ridiculous is that?
Well, isn't Rivera going to be the...
Well, they're thinking he will be the first one.
But do you think there's some jackass that won't put... Like,
there are guys who literally are like, I refuse to put someone in first ballot. Like, I just won't vote for him out of
like
principle.
Old school, yeah,
like, yeah, maybe. Or, hey, you know, this guy had to wait. So because Hank Aaron didn't get a unanimous vote, then I can't give you a unanimous vote.
Yeah,
or
that's ridiculous.
Willie Mays or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
But Halliday's in. So as he should be. I mean, the guy's a Hall of Famer. Every day of the week, he had a remarkable career. And we believe he'll go in with a Blue Jay cap. So that'll be Robbie Alomar and Roy Halladay. That's two Blue Jays. And I think Mike Mussina finally got in.
Good.
Edgar Martinez
Mike
got
Mussina
in.
Was damn good, man.
Yeah. It took him a long time. Yeah. He's been on the ballot forever. You know, and he was a great pitcher. You look at his numbers, his wins above replacement, and some of the stats that stick out. Like, Mussina was a beast. But we'll get you a full update on everyone that's going in. Gord Asch will be in studio here in about 10 minutes. We'll get his take on Halladay going in, first ballot. And we're waiting to hear on Bonds, Clemens, some of the other steroid guys, see where else they all fall in. So we'll get to that next. All right, we have a pair of tickets to give away. Leafs Penguins, February 2nd, down at Scotiabank. And every day this week, we will provide the clue to the identity of a current or ex-Maple Leaf player. And on Friday, you have the chance to call in and name that Leaf. Today's clue... The most goals this Maple Leaf has scored in a single season playing in Toronto is 29 goals. The most goals this Maple Leaf has scored in a single season playing in Toronto is 29. Gord Asch, our TSN Jays analyst, former GM of the Jays. Guys, he knew Roy Halladay intimately. I mean, he was his GM, and he'll be in studio with us shortly. He's just doing a SportsCenter hit. But the news on the Hall of Fame is in. Halliday's in. He's going in. First ballot guy got 85.4% of the votes, 425 voters. But history today, Mariano Rivera, the first ball player in history to be unanimously voted into Cooperstown, 100% of the vote.
Well, what an unbelievable talent. I mean, watching all those championships and Yankees perform over the years, he was as dialed in and automatic as you could be. But how is he the first one?
That's what's weird.
That's the crazy thing. Like, he, again, of course he's a first ballot Hall of Famer. Of course. Right. But you're telling me the first guy ever is a closer?
Like,
you're telling
history.
Me Mickey Mantle didn't go in unanimously? Joe DiMaggio? Hank Aaron?
It is weird.
They didn't go in?
Yeah, that's...
How?
I don't know.
You know? It doesn't make any sense.
No, it doesn't. For me, it doesn't. Like, they're the greatest of the great. Now, Rivera is...
He's the greatest closer of all time, one of the great clutch players in playoff history. He's a spectacular talent. He should get 100% of the vote. But...
Yeah, that's...
How do you explain...
I don't know.
You know, some of the great players of the past not getting unanimous votes. I mean, it was just a principled thing, I guess.
Right.
You know, because it snowballs, which I kind of like. I like that finally we can get over it. You know, like when Mike Trout is up for Hall of Fame status, he should get 100% of the votes.
Yeah.
That's what should be happening. Gord Ash is in studio. Are we messing with your chair over there, Gord, or what's going on?
I think I've shrunk over the years.
Yeah, they're propping you up. You're a big shooter around here. How do you feel about that? Roy Halladay, first ballot Hall of Famer.
Well, very exciting. Obviously, mixed emotions given the circumstances of him not being able to enjoy it. But I know it's an exciting day for the family, exciting day for the organization. First player drafted, signed, and developed by the club to enter into the Hall. It's a pretty significant achievement.
Right. And I believe he'll wear a Jays cap, so it'll be the second one, him and Alomar.
I'd be surprised if he didn't. You know, he made a point at the end of his career to come back and retire as a Blue Jay. I think that speaks volumes of how he felt about the organization. So I think that's the cap he would wear.
Yeah, I believe he was quoted as saying if he had a choice, he would wear the Blue Jays cap. You'd hope that they would honor it. But the Hall of Fame, like, Cooperstown's a weird place, man. Sometimes, like, his biggest platform seasons were in Philly, sadly. Right, because he never got to pitch in a playoff game as a Blue Jay.
And you're right, but I think that really appeals to more of the casual fan, the fan that watches the playoffs and World Series. You know, the writers that are doing the voting, they're very well aware of what Doc did here in Toronto. He was always very respectful to the media. Not that that diminishes his talent on the field, but you know, he was known as a hard worker. He was known as a guy that was an intense competitor. So you know, when you go into Boston, when you go into New York, as many times as he would with the Blue Jays, those are pretty important markets. So he was well known, but I do think the postseason platform was important to him because, you know, he had done everything he could do here. He wanted to win, and that opportunity presented itself in Philadelphia.
Everybody talks about the work ethic and his approach, and he would be at the ballpark before everybody and stay after. Was that right off the bat, or did he learn from somebody else, or was that just sight unseen? That's the way he was.
Well, you know, one of the fallouts from Roger Clemens being around is Roger was that kind of guy. He left nothing to chance. He prepared in every manner you could, including knowing who was going to be the home plate umpire in his next start, and he would research how that umpire called the strike zone. So I think he had a pretty good influence on Halliday and Carpenter and Pat Henken. But, you know, Halliday was already a guy that was prone to want to do that, and I think this just encouraged him to do it even more so.
Gord Ash in studio, breaking news. Roy Halliday going into Cooperstown, first time on the ballot, and he's heading into the Baseball Hall of Fame. Do you have any moment of his that sticks out to you as a Blue Jay when he was with the Jays that has kind of always stood with you and always been with you over the years?
Yeah, you know, unfortunately, I was gone at the end of the 01 season, so I didn't get to see firsthand any of the really good years, 02 to 09. But the one that sticks out in my mind is the start he made against Detroit at the end of the 98 season. He took a no-hitter into the ninth inning, got two outs, and then Bobby Higginson hit a home run to left field to end the shutout and end the no-hitter. But that really sticks out in my mind. And looking back on it, I think it was both an exciting day, but at the same time, maybe expectations got a little out of hand. And he was okay the next year and then really struggled in 2000 and again in spring training of 01. But, you know, the interesting stat that going through it the last couple of days and looking at these numbers, his winning percentage as a Blue Jay was .688. The team was .496.
Right.
So that just tells you the difference that he made when he started ball games.
Well, and that's kind of where...
he went the distance, too. Like, he was always in the 7th, 8th, all the
time. Well, that's the other interesting thing. Complete games aren't that big a deal anymore, not like they used to be, and certainly not with the advent of the bullpen specialist. But he had 67 complete games, which isn't a great number, big number, but when you think about who was second, 33, C.C. Sabathia, more than double.
I think 7 times he led the league in complete games, 4 times in total innings pitched. He was the definition of a horse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. And, you know, he loved to pitch late in the game. The other interesting thing is his earned run average in the 9th inning was the best earned run average of any inning he pitched.
Incredible.
That just tells you when he got to the end, he wanted it.
Right, and that goes against analytics. Right. And I remember that in terms of my memories of Halliday. Watching whoever his manager was at the time. I know Gibbons tried to do it a couple of times, come out and talk to him in the 9th, and he'd be like, get the hell away from me. I'm not coming out. I'm pitching. And the respect the manager had, because he'd say, okay, I'm leaving. You got the ball. Finish it.
And I think the other thing that sticks out in my mind, and a lot of other people, surrounding people, get credit for this, but Roy deserved all the credit because he did all the hard work, which was when he went back in 2002 to start the season back to the minor leagues, and we worked on his delivery and we worked on his pitch selection. He was a fastball curveball guy, tough to throw a curveball for strikes. So he switched up to a sinker and a cutter that really served him well, but he put in the work to get back mentally. He spent a lot of time with sports psychologists trying to get back to that confidence level that he had, and he's the guy that put in the work, and within 3 months he's back in the big leagues.
Breaking news this hour, Roy Halladay off the Cooperstown, first time on the ballot, and he got voted in 85.4% of the votes, 425 total voters, and Halladay got just over 85%, so he's in as a first ballot guy. Mariano Rivera, though, making history today. The first time in Cooperstown history, unanimously voted in. I've never understood that. Like, how did Hank Aaron not go in unanimously? How did Joe DiMaggio not go in?
Even a few years ago with Ken Griffey.
Right, Cal Ripken. And how did those guys not automatically get in?
Because of the way the votes are handled, there are voters that really probably shouldn't deserve a vote because they're not regular observers of the game, and they want to register their protest, so to speak. Like going back to Robbie Alomar not that long ago, he was not a first-time ballot inductee because he had that incident with the umpire, and they were going to make him pay for that, so to speak. So
they took that incident that seriously that they were going to... I mean, I know it wasn't a pretty thing.
Oh, it was ugly, but the sanctimony of the voters, it's always been a joke.
Yeah, it is, and that's why, how does somebody get 20% 1 year and close to 70% the next year? I mean, nothing happened. The player didn't play.
Right.
So you wonder how those kind of things happen. So it's a flawed system, no doubt about it. But when you think about 20,000 players, I think, have played Major League Baseball or close to it, and there's just over 200 in the Hall of Fame, that's a pretty elite group.
Well, I haven't seen the numbers yet on Bonds and Clemens, but what my read on the situation was, based on the ballots that have been exposed, they're starting to move up a little bit.
Up.
Are you expecting that they're going to get in? Or?
I do. I think there's becoming a realization that that was a difficult time for baseball, and there was a lot more going on than people want to admit to. So I think they were still obviously very, very talented players, and they're starting to get the benefit of the doubt now.
Yeah, I'm all for them going in. I've always been all for them going in. I think the Hall of Fame discussion, it's the reason why it's so fascinating and so omnipresent is because you can have any take. Some people are just strictly against steroid users.
The states get fired up, man. You hear the back and forth between people on Twitter. They're like, yeah, I can't believe you're going to put that guy
all
in.
The time.
Those players are quite polarizing, though.
Oh, they are.
Yeah,
that's
another thing. They weren't the most liked guys in the world. Barry Bonds didn't have the greatest reputation.
But it opens up a whole other issue, because if you're going to put Bonds and Clemens, where's Sammy Sosa? He's hit the most home runs in a decade.
Ramirez should be in.
So there's all kinds of issues that come forward. Great for the game, great for conversation, but certainly not going to be any agreement on it anytime soon,
no.
I don't think.
And A-Rod in a couple of years is going to be up. And I mean, A-Rod, I don't know who the poster boy is of the steroid era. I always thought
Barry
it was
Bonds, man. Come on.
You think it's Bonds?
Of course.
I think A-Rod can make a pretty significant push. He was later than him. But remember, he got caught, and he copped to it. He's like, I'm never doing it again. He got caught again. Like, you know, Bonds has always just said, hey, you never caught me.
Yeah.
He's never admitted to anything, as far as I know.
He hasn't.
A-Rod did and then got caught again.
Yeah, and Clemens never...
Clemens always fought it. Remember, misremember and all that kind of stuff. They went all the way to Congress.
For me, Canseco was the poster boy of the era. He talked about it. He wrote a book about it. He was very open about it. So he's probably the poster boy for it.
Would Canseco be a Hall of Famer for you if he wasn't attached to the PDs?
No, because he was really an incomplete player. He was a power hitter. He was a poor defender. So, I don't think he was a complete enough player. Although, now, with Baines and Edgar Martinez getting in as incomplete players, that probably opens up another conversation.
You're telling me a ball going off a head and over the wall isn't proper defense? Is that what you're telling me?
On the highlight package again today?
That's the single greatest play in history, I think. Well,
Didn't they throw him in pitching?
Yeah,
and
he
hurt himself.
Well.
Yeah, he blew his arm out, I think. Well, Gord, I mean, obviously a really special day for Blue Jays fans. I'm sure they're feeling the same way down in Philly. Roy Halladay going in, first ballot. You knew him very, very well. I think it's well-deserved. And who do you think is maybe next on the docket in terms of an association with the Blue Jays? Is there a guy? Do you think Bautista could make a push in a few years? Or
yeah, I think he'll serve some time on the ballot. I think there's guys on the ballot right now that had connection to the Blue Jays that probably will have a chance eventually. Fred McGriff,
right?
One, Jeff Kent's another one. Roger Clemens here for a couple of years. So those are probably the next wave of guys that I don't think any of them would wear a Blue Jay cap going in the hall, but certainly have some connection with the club. And, you know, when you look at the next wave, Bautista has to be considered. I mean, he was a dominant player for several years, and I'm not sure his overall numbers will be strong enough or his reputation with the writers is good enough either, but he'll certainly get strong consideration.
Great seeing you, Gord. Thank you for doing this.
Great to be here. Thank you.
Former GM of the Blue Jays and our TSN 1050 Jays analyst, Gord Ash. Again, Roy Halladay, breaking news this hour. Halladay off the Cooperstown, his first year on the ballot. Rivera's going with him. Edgar Martinez and Mike Mussina going in as well. A four-pack of players all going into Cooperstown in 2019.
Edgar Martinez was another one. People arguing about the DH. Mm-hmm. Can't go in, can't do this.
Took him a long time to get in. Yep.
I'd like to see Clemens. I don't know why.
They should be in. I mean, I've always argued
that I'd like to see Clemens in too.
Yeah, I'd like to see him.
The Hall of Fame, it's a state of mind anyway. You know, like it's a shrine, and I understand it, and it's important to the people that are on the panels and on the committees and that work there. But how many people have even been to Cooperstown, New York? You know, how many people have been to I'm a massive diehard NFL fan. I've never been to Canton, Ohio. Yeah. I've never been to Springfield, Massachusetts. I love the NBA.
Yeah.
Never been there. You know,
it's
more of a state of mind anyway. And for me, Bonds and Clemens, A-Rod, Manny, Sosa, McGuire, they're all Hall of Famers.
But you said there are some traditionalists that are older.
I believe is the Football Hall of Fame, pal.
Thanks, Buds. I thought I said that, didn't I? That's what I meant to say anyway. I've never been to Canton, and I'm a big NFL fan.
He basically pointed out all the sports.
So I thought you were talking baseball.
He pointed out all the sports.
Right.
Yeah. Except for hockey. You've been to the hockey
I've been to the Hockey Hall of Fame. I've been to Cooperstown. I have been there. It's an incredible place. It's a really cool town. But the point I'm making is 99% of fans never get to the Hall of Fames anyway.
Exactly.
So, like, actually physically being in there doesn't mean anything to people.
There are people that yell and scream about it. You're right. But it's more of the
it's the fake outrage all over again. Everyone just goes crazy about it.
Well, if you have progressive thinking on maybe some younger progressive thinking that don't care about the steroids, then Bonds and Clemens make it in.
There was people that were voting that were showing their ballot. Would you ever do that? Like, show?
Happily. Absolutely. Own it.
I think I
own
voted.
The ballot.
That's where they were getting destroyed. They were like, and Keith Olbermann down in the States, he was a big, like, he was just torching guys left and right. I can't believe this guy, that guy.
Well, exactly.
Roy users, this, that.
Yeah, that Olbermann.
Yeah, but Olbermann's got his opinion. I mean, that's what, he's entitled to it. Yeah. But what everyone's supposed to do, what Keith Olbermann wants, you know, like, I get
that guy's really weird.
Well, like he's a big baseball historian. Like, if you track Olbermann, he loves baseball. He's into baseball. But
he, like, yells and screams about Trump, and he's like...
Well, he lived in Trump Tower, is my understanding, and he moved out.
He's that upset, eh?
Yeah, he couldn't take it anymore. But yeah, he hates Trump.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, you follow this guy on Twitter. I had to mute him because it's just, I couldn't stand to, you know, he is a very big opinionist.
Oh man, he's an incredible broadcaster.
Right, but he just seems like he was just very angry. So yeah. I was like, I can't.
Well,
deal
it's
with
bullying
this guy.
People into yeah, thinking like he exactly. His way or the highway.
Yeah, I did. And he said some stuff on hockey too that I disagreed with. So I wasn't like, I don't need to hear this dope.
All right.
So
we'll get to our best bets brought to you by Proline and Raptors in action tonight. There was an update on Kawhi Leonard and his load management earlier today.
Yes.
We will recap that next. All right, time now for our best bets brought to you by Proline. Laying the points. Phoenix. Actually, you know what? I'm going to take the points. Phoenix at home against Minnesota. I'm going to take the points across the board. Clippers at Dallas. Portland at Oklahoma City. I'm on underdogs tonight. Wow. Throw down 20. You can score 100. You can find my picks on Twitter at TSN 1050 Radio and get way into the game with Proline. It's the sports betting game that lets you turn small wagers into big excitement. Proline, get way into the game. Raptors, big, big favorites tonight. Kawhi Leonard not playing, but this kind of makes sense. I mean, Sacramento's not a great team anyway.
And they played last night in Brooklyn.
Yeah, and De'Aaron Fox is not going, who's a stud. He's probably their best player, and he's not playing tonight. So Kawhi's out. Fox is out. Everything being equal, Raptors probably should win big tonight. But Kawhi, we just assumed, okay, you're not playing tonight back-to-back. You're going to play in Indiana. That's a really important matchup, a big matchup. It's a rival. But Kawhi's not playing tomorrow night. 24 straight hours of load management.
Well, as long as he...
Load management.
As long as he's ready to go for Friday against the Beard.
What
right?
are you saying? Like, are you saying he wakes up and gets out of bed and there's a dude standing there saying, like, how's your knee feel?
I don't think so.
No, I think it's an assessment probably. And... You know, he checks in or whatever, gets to the arena.
I don't know.
Gets to the arena.
The facility.
Like
I don't know what they do.
I played with some guys that just... You ever play with guys that every night they'd be like, I don't have it tonight. Just don't feel good.
But still play.
I know.
But that's the thing. Like
maybe
Kawhi...
Maybe just out of shape. Every night, just nothing. I got nothing.
What if Kawhi could be... in great form right now? Like, what if he's walking around Scotiabank like, I feel like playing, I'm dying to play?
Wouldn't you like to hope that, I know you got to protect yourself, but wouldn't you like to hope he'd say, you know what, just like Roy Halladay did on the mound, screw you, I'm playing.
Yeah, like that would be...
I think it's more complicated than, hey, prove to us, because... Obviously, he's on board with it.
They're looking at the science of it.
Obviously, there's a history with last year, what happened.
Exactly. And they're trying to make him feel comfortable and trying to get across, hey, we're in your corner. We're not going to force you in anything. We want to make sure you're at optimal levels of performance here. But what I think will end up happening is wherever he plays next year, if it's in Toronto, if it's with the Clippers, I got to think starting next year, it's over. You know, when you get someone's going to hand this guy $200 million, and they're going to say,
"We don't care about the load management.
You got to
play. Go every night."
Yeah, we'll give you some strategic nights off, but I'm not giving you a week off randomly in the middle of the season. You got to play.
You don't think that he's actually changing the way that sports are going to be played? Like I could see in the future. Just hear me out. I could see in the future.
There's too much money involved.
I understand that. I could see in the future that sports science, just like analytics, just like everything, through education, in 82-game season for hockey, for basketball. Now, football's different.
Well, why don't they all sit down with the owners and say, you know what, 82 games is too much.
Then maybe that's what's going to happen. They may
never happen.
Back. I understand that, but what I'm saying is it may be come to a point where what's best for a player is 70 games. And they may have to figure that out, where there's 12 throwaway, maybe they expand the roster.
I think you're right. I think we're pretty much already there in the NBA. There's a lot of players in the league. Like, Popovich has been doing that forever for his guys.
Right.
But to O's point, when does the season ticket holder
revenue
put up his hand and say, load management, give me my money back
then?
Exactly.
I pay.
Because if you're telling me LeBron's missing 12 games every year, I want 12 freebies.
Yeah, you're right.
You know what I mean? Like, if you have tickets for the game tonight or Saturday and you're like, I'm buying to go see Kawhi and he's out because of load management, you know, like, we can understand it, the team can understand it, and the the team will explain it as, hey, we got to do what's in our best interest to win in the spring. But if you're kind of a fair weather guy or whatever and you bought tickets, you're like, what the hell is this all about?
I agree.
Injuries, I can understand. Load management, and I can't see the guy I want to see and I paid for.
But
you know?
I still believe that comes back to scheduling. The fact that we still, because there's so many games and it has to be condensed, like the Leafs are getting Washington tomorrow. Washington's playing tonight at home. Like the back-to-back games, I don't know how you could do it, but
the obvious answer is you contract the amount of games. You get rid of 12, 15 games, whatever it is.
But you're getting a better product. You're getting a better product.
But who's to say then they won't just reduce the load management? Let's say it drops to 70, then the sports science guy who has to prove his worth goes, 60 games is perfect.
Then that's on them. You're right.
I don't know if there is a perfect.
I just think that there is a future in managing.
There's an importance on it. Yes. I understand that. Which is interesting because you talk about the old school where guys didn't work out, they ate like garbage, they boozed all the time, but they played every night. Now it's like perfect shape. You don't eat salt or sugar, yet you need more rest today than you did 20 years ago.
How many people do we know that ate bacon? Like, I'm sure somebody has a grandfather who lived to be 95, drank, smoked, ate bacon, did everything.
Keith Richards, every day, bacon Sandy. Exactly. Every day,
bacon Sandy. It's the way of the world. We're just living in a different world.
I haven't had a bacon sandwich in like 20 years.
You got to do bacon, egg, and cheese. There's no such thing as bacon.
No.
Absolutely. I've had bacon sandies as a kid.
We're
going to
talk about the Leafs versus Caps. We're going to talk about bacon sandies all tomorrow at 4 o'clock.
At 4 p.m.
We'll chat then.